everyone, and welcome back to the 16mm Film Crew. I'm Cindy.
And I'm Dale.
You can listen to us everywhere podcasts are found at 16mm Film Crew Podcast. You can leave us a rate and review there. You can watch us on YouTube. You can like and comment on our YouTube videos and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can visit us on our website at www.16mmfilmcrew.com. So this week we watched Anatomy of a Fall, directed by Justine Triet. Anatomy of a Fall is a 2023 French legal drama thriller. The film premiered at the 76th Cannes Film Festival, where it won the Palme d'Or. In this film, a woman is suspected of her husband's murder, and their blind son faces a moral dilemma as the sole witness. This film stars Sandra Hüller as Sandra Voiter and Milo Greiner as Daniel Malinsky. So, Dale, tell us what you thought about this film.
I thought this movie was, like, very messy. Not messy in a cinematic way. It's just relationship problems, I think, are not very cut and dry, and we like to assume they are. And also the mental aspect issues of it, I resonated for the husband. That's how resonated a lot with me, because I do see some kind of those habits I see in myself, as you're not as forthright with your therapist as you should be, and you kind of do hold stuff in, and you know, your family and the people around you do have a different understanding or interpretation of how they're experiencing or witnessing what you're experiencing. So I thought how they showcased that was actually very true, because even when me and my sisters talk about, you know, how we react to our parents raising us all differently, we all have different perspectives of it. And it's until you talk, you don't realize that. So those two things I really enjoyed with this movie a lot.
Yeah, I thought this movie was fantastic. Like, it was really, really good. I like that it plays with the ideas of perception, how we perceive each other, but also because it's a court drama, how other people are perceiving you if you're like on the witness stand, but or if you have to testify. Like, everyone is kind of watching everyone and reading them and judging them in their own ways. And I thought that was really interesting to like see that. And it just brought up so many interesting like points of complicated relationships, just being like a human being and like having to explain certain things to people who weren't there at the time and tried to give like an accurate account of like a situation that was very messy. Yeah. And like constantly changing. So I thought that was such an interest. I don't know. I just thought it was really good of like talking about all the ambiguities of like what it's like to be in a relationship, in a marriage, raising a child. Like, how do you explain to a row of jurors your marriage in like a very concise way where they'll be able to like receive it? It's very tricky. And I really liked how they displayed that. Like, it's a 2 hour and 30 minute film, but like, I feel like every moment is kind of justified in kind of explaining kind of every like situation that happens in this marriage that kind of leads up to this tragedy of Sandra's husband Samuel being killed, so, or dying.
Yeah,
we don't know if she did it or not. Yeah, that's another thing that's very interesting about this is like, how do you feel about like if she did it or if she didn't do it? Because towards the, because like the first hour, I was like, she might have done it, but I don't care because I like her. But then the last hour, I was like, I don't think she did it. But I like that it raises these questions of like, even if she did or did do it, like, or not even if she did, but like, you're just never quite sure like if she did it or if she didn't do it. And I think what was interesting is at the end, it's like, even though she was vindicated from it, it's not like a win.
No.
You know, it's not like she won anything. It's just like, she just doesn't have to go to prison. But her life is still, you know, kind of in shambles because of this. So I really liked how they kind of drew us this picture, let us live in this world for a little bit. I was completely invested in this from like that first 50 Cent PMIP needle drop that they had. I was like, I'm in, like, because obviously they have taste, like, obviously. So of course I'm ready for this journey. Great opening scene. I did not expect that to happen. Didn't really know what this film was about. I kind of came in blind, but I knew that once it dropped at Cannes and won the Palme d'Or, I was like, I want to see this movie so bad. So it's like taken almost a year, but that's just my quick summary of like, this movie is kind of it. Like, the girl is good.
Yeah, it's very heavy. And I do think though, for most English speaking audiences, the idea of the movie being in French, and I guess they kind of did promote it really. The movie is not fully in French at all. Mm-hmm. Large aspects mm-hmm. of it are in English. But, you know, mm-hmm. for some reason, a lot of moviegoers or American moviegoers have this aversion to subtitles. And I think that might have held back the movie a bit as far as people viewing it here. But, yeah, like you said, like, in the beginning, you're on her side. And then at certain points, you flip and you kind of realize mm-hmm. they're like, once again, perception is different. Like, and I love how they kind of also showcase perception in this movie visually, as the son is blind and all he can do is hear what's going on and what's happening. But throughout the movie, they do flip shots to his POV, even though he's blind. Like, he's in the rooms, but he can't see people. But you could see him walking through the rooms, so he just doesn't know their exact location. Like, I think, like, the ending is perfect. Like, where he's thinking about, is it possible of my father, you know, deciding to kill himself? Where he goes to the attic and he opens the door, and then he looks down and the camera gives you his POV. Those instances like that were really pivotal. But I found it weird because he can't perceive that fall, but he still looks down, you know? I love those kind of shots. And yeah, the most heart-wrenching part of this is, you know, every relationship, whether marriage, boyfriend, girlfriend, even friendships have, you know, issues. And I don't know how I'd feel if my relationship's dirty laundry was like aired out in such a public mm-hmm. manner like there was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I think that, I don't know, I love watching not court dramas, but like when the Johnny Depp Amber Heard thing was going on, I found these YouTubers who like talk about law exclusively, but some of them will just watch like trial, like these big trials, and comment on them, and I find it so fascinating. But the reason why I'm bringing it back to the Depp and Heard trial is because this was kind of not to this extent, no one died, but when like all of your baggage is being, you know, laid out in front of not only the jurors, but just people who come to trial, like who don't have anything to do really with the case, they're just there. For the Depp and Heard, that was worse because it was televised. But like, this is kind of, it reminded me so much of it just because of like, not only the circumstance of like having to really kind of go through a complicated marriage and try to explain that to people, but also having other people like experts who were knowledgeable about the crime, therapists who were coming in discussing stuff. Like, it's a very complex and very exposing thing to go through. I would be mortified. I don't know if I could do it. I'd be like, can we settle out of court? But obviously this is a criminal case, so you can't do that. But that's so, to me, that's like its own trauma, like having to discuss all of those things. And especially in front of Daniel, that was,
yes,
to me, that was the worst part.
Yeah.
That made, like, there's a scene where that lawyer, the other, I guess, what is the prosecution lawyer?
Prosecution, yeah.
Is questioning Sandra about Samuel. And I guess she was talking about his accident where he, you know, got visually impaired.
Yeah.
And she was saying how she didn't want Samuel to put any negative feelings onto Daniel, because it's like, she didn't want him to think that he was broken or damaged just because he had lost the sense of his eyes. Of his sight. And it's like, when she starts to discuss that, like, I'm not a parent, but like, I can imagine as a mother, like, really trying to protect your child, and not make them feel like they're othered because of their, you know, a situation that they had no control over and they have to learn how to live with. That almost sent me to tears. I was like on the brink of crying because I was like, that is really powerful. Because it's interesting because it's like you don't think about sometimes how your words can come out to someone. And I really feel like she was trying to like shield him from ever feeling different or at lack because of his disability. And I was just like, first of all, great acting. This woman, Sandra Hüller, on another level, because it really didn't feel like a performance. And that's how I knew it was good, because I was like, I can't even tell that you're acting right now.
Yeah.
But that was so powerful. Like, I just felt like it was so heart-wrenching. And he was in the courthouse. And I don't know, usually in court cases that are this sensitive, your kids should not be there. Yeah, they should not be present. But the fact that he was there like every day and that he also testified twice, I was like, France, what are these rules? Like, can we not protect the kids? Like, I don't understand. It made me so uncomfortable because I was just like, he doesn't need to be hearing all of this. Like, that's really, I'm scared. I'm scared for Daniel. I know he's not real, but.
Yeah. And I love, and that's the thing, like, because I think as we get older as adults, we kind of realize being a parent and, you know, having kids, even without kids, you begin to analyze your parents' relationship in a different limelight than you did as a kid. Not even that, you start to analyze all your experiences witnessing, like, inner family stuff, you know, your parents and their siblings when they get together as adults, or even on uncles and stuff happens at people's house. You start to, as an adult, like, oh, this is a situation that's happening. And I feel so bad for him because he has to experience that now as, like, a child. Like, he doesn't have the chance as an adult to have the mental capacity to understand and kind of empathize on those experiences. And you kind of do witness that more for Daniel himself at the end, where his mother is acquitted of murdering his father. But in his joy, you kind of do see a hesitation of, what if my mother actually, you know, killed him? There's like, you can see that kind of breaking, oh, mom is home, she's not going to jail. But there's also still that hint of what if hidden within that veneer. And like, that's like one of my things. I love watching actors do that kind of stuff. But yeah, this movie is like a lot to digest and, you know, watch.
Yeah, Milo, who plays Daniel, a phenomenal actor. I think the director said it was almost like watching I can't remember his last name, but who was the star child in E.T. Mm-hmm. It was like that kind of magic of like, you are so phenomenal, you're so young, but you have the gift. Because a lot of this is almost, not exactly a two-hander, but kind of like, Milo has kind of almost equal screen time with Sandra in terms of like, we're really seeing his story alongside hers.
Yeah.
And he carries so much of it so well, like a lot of sensitive moments. And the thing is like, you can't be as like expressive with your eyes because the character is blind. So it's like, you have to, you know, use other ways of communication through your body and through your voice and stuff to really get points across. I felt like some of the dialogue was too mature for him. Like, I don't know how on earth he would be able to articulate to the level that he was at that age in some of the scenes. Cause I was like, I wouldn't know how to say something like that, like when I was that young. But either way, I think they were trying to show that he is just a very intelligent, intuitive child.
Yeah.
And I thought he did such a great job. He really, I mean, my heart was like breaking for him every time I saw him, especially in those earlier scenes when he had to like go through the demonstrations and they were questioning his memory and stuff like that. And I was like, please leave him alone. Like, I was mad at the system. Like, I was angry at the people who were making him go through this, because I was like, don't do this to him. But Sandra was the only person in the house when Samuel died. So it was like, we need answers for this. And so, but anyways, I thought that he just killed it. Like, he was so good. And you know who else was amazing? The dog. The dog was the star of the show. Snoop Dogg. Like, he killed it. No, the dog was literally a main character. I'm sorry. Like, he was giving it. Like, he really gave everything that moment when he had to, like, act sick after he took the aspirin. I was like, yes, acting. Like, it was wonderful.
Man, look, that scene is probably the only, that's probably the only scene in the movie that made me mad. Because I love animals, and I got a dog, and I was like, look what you doing? No, you're going to kill the dog. And I was like, oh, you're going to kill the dog. Why? And now they're going to think you're, like, have mental issues and you're crazy as well, because now you're kind of reacting toward what's going on, your mother and father, and now you're expressing it in, like, in a violent manner. And I was like, no. So, yeah.
Oh, I love that dog. Yeah. What were you about to say?
I love court dramas. Mentioned love court dramas. I love the intellectual back and forth between her team and the prosecutor, and I love the fact that the admission of him secretly recording their problems and stuff, that comes as, like, out of nowhere for her team. And, like, her lawyer's just on it. He's just calling her audible. And, you know, and adapted to it, like, at the drop of a hat, which I don't think would ever really happen in real life. You know, you drop some, like new evidence immediately without the other team hearing. I think it's, like, admissible because both teams have not been, you know, made aware of it.
Right.
But I don't know the law in France, so I can't comment on that. But, yeah, that was intense. Like, that skinhead dude, like, I wanted to punch him, like, so bad. Then he's trying to analyze her work on, like, a literary level, saying, oh, you're inspired by your life, like all creators are. You're usually inspired by your life. So now I'm going to start picking apart your books and your writing. And they also mimic that in, like, a talk show where they were pulling articles from her book and her previous quotes and stuff like that. Yeah.
When I tell you, this reminded me so much of the Depp Heard trial. Oh, my God. Because literally the same thing happened where they were recording each other and it was brought up in court. And that's how we got, like, all the crazy things and some of the, you know, rough stuff that came out during that trial. But, like, that's one of the things that really pissed me off in this. To me, the movie is a 10 out of 10. I think it was great. But in terms of, like, what got me upset was how the murder trials are structured in France. I don't know if this is, I mean, obviously this is a movie, but I'm wondering, like, if it's structured in the same way where it's like, you can just bring up random stuff that, like, you have to do discovery before a trial starts. Like, you can't just be like, oh, and here's this new clip. Like, no, that's not how that works. But also, like, the fact that he was able to read her book and be like, this is somehow evidence. Like, girl, what are you talking about? Like, and he was making little quips and jokes and stuff. People were just, like, interrupting and talking. I'm like, this is how y'all run your courtroom? Like, there is no order here. Like, people are just saying stuff. Like, that's so weird to me. And the judge was getting on my last nerve too. I was like, girl, can you do your job, please? She literally, to me, was like, oh, let me just hear the tea. Like, she looked like she was just in, like, she wanted to hear the mess. I'm like, you need to be actually doing your job. You're just letting these people talk. That's not how this works. So I don't know if it was just for the movie or if this is how they actually get down in France, but no bueno. I didn't like it.
The fact that at the beginning he, like, used her sexual identity as a reason to say, oh, that's a reason for the conflict. Like, when the student who comes to the house and is interviewing her goes, oh, you're bisexual. And then she goes, oh, you were probably mad at your husband saying, playing 50 Cent P.I.M.P. because highly misogynistic, so he took it out on him in, like, a violent manner. But ignoring the fact that he's most likely aware of what's happening downstairs, and he's playing that song in a misogynistic manner to be petty and purposeful. Like, he's not like an innocent bystander in any of this at all. And I think that's what one thing the movie does an excellent example of. Because she reiterates it, and he doesn't like defend himself when she says, "You chose to move us here, and now you regret your decision. You chose to move us here. You were working in the city. You were fine. You know, our son has this accent. You move us to the countryside, and now you're saying you want to turn into an Airbnb, and you want to do that on your own. That's a decision you made. You wanted to do it.
Right.
We could have been in the city. You could have been still doing teaching and writing. You know, still homeschooling him with your free time or having him in the school. Like, in those situations, I really do see her side a lot. She's like, you made a decision to do this. We're both a couple, but you also have to deal with it, which is kind of a weird thing, because then she goes on, I don't believe in, I pronounced that word wrong, and equality in a relationship or in a marriage.
Reciprocity,
yeah. She's like, because you do something doesn't mean I have to do something, which... That doesn't help your relationship at all if you're just being belligerent, like, oh, he can do whatever he wants and I'm going to ignore it. It doesn't help at all. So you kind of do empathize on both of them for him being bitter that he's now stuck in this, but her saying, but you caused it. This is kind of your fault. So now you got to sort it out. I'm going to do my writing thing. You took this mantle of homeschooling, teaching, and remodeling house all at the same time. And you can't do all three. You need to pick something. So.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, there. First of all, I can imagine as like an actor, getting a role like this is so great because it's so complicated and juicy. Like, there's a lot to get through in this character. She's a very flawed person, and I like that they don't shy away from that.
Yeah.
You know, just because she's the woman doesn't mean that she's automatically the victim. Like, that's not how this works, and actually. It's almost a reverse in terms of, like, if you're thinking about, like, stereotypical roles, she's actually more reserved, distant, dominant. You know, she kind of runs things a little bit more, as the husband says. But she's also not as affectionate or, you know, doesn't have a strong bond with her child according to Samuel, before all this stuff happened. So it's like, it's interesting because it's like how they're kind of messing with your perceptions of like how you might have come into the film thinking that these people were going to be. And so they're kind of like flipping these kind of stereotypes and perceptions on its head and being like, no, well, she's a woman, but she had the affair. Like, she's a woman, but, you know, she is making most of the money. She's not spending all of her time with her child. Like, she's not doing the domestic things that you might assume a woman should be doing. So I think that that was a really interesting thing, but they also didn't make it just like a, let's just reverse things just to see what it's like. It almost feels like it's tied to her culture, like where she's from, how she grew up. All of that is informed of like, all that informed kind of who she is, I guess, when they met and then obviously through their marriage. And I thought that was really, just a really smart way to kind of tilt it. So again, it's like as the audience member, you're kind of on your toes a little bit, like you're not really sure. And I really like that. I really like that I was never quite sure about where I stood with her. I mean, I liked her and I didn't love all the things that she did, but I actually liked how kind of forthcoming she was for the most part. Like, she lied, obviously, in some places, but she was. Seemed like she was pretty good for the most part of like actually explaining where she was coming from and seemed genuine in those explanations. Like, she wasn't trying to like minimize things or cover things up. She seemed like she was trying to really like be honest, which for the most part. And I'm like, okay, I like that. I like that about her. And I like that she's not taking the husband Samuel's excuses of like why things aren't working out. She's like, no, you have accountability in this. And I really like that. That, for me, it was one of the best scenes, that argument scene, mainly because when we're introduced to it, you don't actually see what happens. She explains it, they cut to the actual scene of like what it was, the actual argument. But as it gets physical, they cut away from it and you're back in the courtroom. And so at first I was like, oh, are they not gonna show us like what, who hit who, what actually happened? Are they trying to make it like more ambiguous of like who was the aggressor. I was like, oh, that's good. She explains it later, but like, if she didn't, I would have been like, oh my God, that's crazy, bro. Like, but I just love, again, visual language. I loved how they did that. Everything, again, everything was top notch in this. Like, just, but also in the dialogue, like, the conversation kind of goes around and around in circles. Like, he starts off saying something and then they go a little further and he's back to saying that same thing. Like, real arguments are, where it's just like, at a certain point, you're just talking about the same things over and over again. You haven't reached a solution yet. And I thought the writing in this was superb. Like, because everyone's talking for most of it. Like, just all of it is dialogue for the most part. And I also like language, how the language is used, where it's like, she is German, but she speaks in English. Daniel only speaks French. So it's like, she has to try to communicate with him in the language that he's used to. She can only speak French for in the beginning at the courthouse. And then they're like, okay, we'll listen to the translation. She speaks English. But also how Samuel uses the fact that she doesn't speak French kind of against her as like, well, you're not meeting me where I am. Like, you're using the English as like, you know, a way to kind of, I don't know, separate us, make us a little distant. And she was like, no, I'm using English because it's a middle ground.
Yeah.
Because we all speak different languages. But I love that, right, that the dialogue and the language of it is so central in terms of like how we understand these people. I thought that was, again, a brilliant thing to do, because she could have just spoke French throughout the entire movie, but she deliberately speaks English for most of it. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I think that scene also plays into a lot of aspects of the language barriers. Another aspect of xenophobia people don't really, you know, focus on, because everybody has the experience of, you know, going to the nail salon. You know, I get a manicure, I get a pedicure, and that kind of worry of, oh, is it not to be racist, but are these people talking about me in a different language? I don't know. And it's that concern, because now you're in a court. And especially if you're in a foreign court, you don't speak the language, they're not going to look at you the same way as a witness or as in your defense. And so now they're saying, now I have to think about what you're saying. And it also forces them, which I think is good. I think that's what, I think her switching from French to English, forcing her friend, like ignoring her friend's advice and saying, I'm going to speak in English, it forces them to pay attention more to what she's saying and how they have to actively listen. They can't just, they're not noticing her now mumbling and struggling to speak English. They don't see her as in a weaker position. They see her in a fully developed person who's able to express themselves and articulate themselves on a level. And like, I think had she spoken French and struggled with it, they would have probably not looked at her, or the case probably went a different way, you know? And that's also what the husband's dealing with, us not speaking my native language in my house, in my country is wrong. And then she counters, like, we both met in London speaking English. I'm German, you're French. It was not an issue there. You're the only other person I talked to in this house. I don't know French. Why can't? And her logic makes perfect sense. Like, of course, Daniel's going to grow up speaking French because that's where he is now. That's the people he's interacting with. For her, as an adult, learning another language is a struggle. So I do enjoy that they also include that in the movie. So that's one thing we ignore a lot of times in these situations. Yeah.
That's a great point. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it was just so, like you said, this movie is a lot. Like, there's just so many, like, layers to try to get through with this. Like, I'm also thinking about her writing, and I don't know, it's so weird looking back at it now, because in the beginning of the movie where she's doing that interview with that student, she doesn't want to reveal anything about herself. And yet, because of this incident, because of this death, she has to be extremely honest about the most private parts of her life, which is such an interesting contrast when you think about like how we started off. But in her writing, when he was trying to use the writing of her, you know, taking one, they're accusing her of like plagiarizing, basically taking Samuel's ideas and making it her own book.
Yeah.
But also just how like she seems, she talks about death and about someone getting murdered in her books, and like, can that be linked back to her mental state? Was she trying to actually kill him? But there's a part where she's like in a hotel room and she's watching some TV program where they're talking about her case, and he's talking about the book, and he's basically, the host is like, you know, whether she did it or not, it's still entertaining. And again, it kind of goes back to the perception of like, people aren't even thinking about the individuals concerned in this case as people who are suffering. They're only thinking about it as entertainment.
Yeah.
And again, that's just like another layer of perception of like how we even view some of these bigger cases of like, are we talking about it with the sensitivity that it needs to be? Or is it just like, oh, wow, did you hear what happened? Isn't that crazy? So it's like, it's kind of coming at everyone in a bit. No one is kind of let off easy on this movie. The characters aren't, you aren't as an audience member. Like, everyone kind of has some responsibility in this. And I think that that is such, I don't know, an interesting way to make a movie. Like, it's just very layered. Like, to just be thinking about not only like how the characters are viewing each other, but how you are viewing these people as you're watching it and what that says about you. I like how it really makes you as an audience member have stakes in this film and participate.
Yeah.
Like, you're not like a passive watcher. Like, you're actively, like, it makes you be actively in it, because the whole time you're thinking, okay, well, did she do it or didn't she do it? And, well, did that happen? That argument was crazy. Why is Daniel even there? Like, it's just, you're just so, and you have to be invested in it, mm-hmm. which is a really great way to make a movie. Like, you can't just sit on the sidelines. It's great.
But and I think that particular section when the talk show, I guess, is discussing her book in the mm-hmm. trial, like, and you mentioned a Johnny Depp, Amber Heard thing. That also, like, they talk about people developing parasocial relationships with celebrities online and how we're so engrossed mm-hmm. in entertainment. Like, she's a known famous French writer. And people just see her court case and trial as an extension of her entertainment value. You know, and I think that mm-hmm. is also probably a metacritic on how we, as a society, view celebrities. Like, you must entertain me 24/7. Good or bad, no matter what you're dealing with, I want the tea.
Mm, which is sick. Like, it's actually really sick and twisted.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like that as you're questioning her, if she did it or not, also the people around her are questioning it too. Even her lawyer is, there's like a few scenes where you're not really sure if he believes her or not. But I guess my thing is like, as a lawyer, does it matter if you believe your client? I don't know. I actually don't know the psychology behind that.
I think in his case, though, it's more, he needs the assurance, because they do mention after, I think, the second day in court, when they're just mm-hmm. outside by the fire drinking, he's like, oh, I liked you.
Yeah.
And then he asked her, oh, what did you think of me back then? And she's like, oh, I don't remember. But that just reinforces that she is literally so engrossed in herself, in her world, she does not understand or have empathy for people outside of it. And maybe her, and I can understand why the prosecution would bring up her writing. And kind of use it as a diary, because maybe her creative process in writing is basically responding subconsciously to everything she doesn't focus on. In that way. So, but yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. I love how they incorporated that too. Just what inspires you? How do you, like, how stories kind of help us shape meaning? Like, mm-hmm. we need to understand. And that's another thing that Daniel kept saying. He's like, I need to understand why this is happening. And I feel like her writing is a way of her kind of trying to contextualize things in her life that she can't fully, I don't know, grab onto. But yeah, it's, again, I really, I don't know what else to say other than I really love this movie because there is just so much like stuff in it to talk about. Like I think it's interesting when the woman who is in charge of like taking care of Daniel, I think her name is Marge.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marge. She and he is continuing to like go back and forth about like if he thinks his mother did it or not. And she was like, sometimes we just have to like decide. Like you have to figure out something, some way to make it make sense and then just stick with that. Mm-hmm. Because the trial isn't always gonna expose or reveal everything that needs to be revealed. It's not gonna always give you all the answers that you want. Like you're probably gonna be left sometimes with more answers, I mean, with more questions than answers.
Better answers, yeah.
So you kind of have to like, you have to find the meaning in it. You have to find a way for it to make sense. And it's so crazy. Like the way that this movie talks about grief relationships is just so honest. Like it's so like glaringly honest of like, this tragedy has happened to you. How do you make sense of it? And as a kid, like I really related to Daniel so much because mm-hmm. it's like when you're a kid and you see things going on in your house, you don't always understand like what it is, but you can feel it. You can feel that it's not right.
There's
and I think that
yeah.
the energy is so negative and it just feels wrong. And you don't have the words articulated, but you can already feel it. And I really love how much agency they gave to Daniel, because even though he's a child, his experience is still validated in this. And I really thought that that was just a great way to depict kind of when a marriage is breaking down and going wrong, like this is how it's being received by the other people in the home. And I just thought that was really well done. But yeah, it raises a lot of questions. It talks about perception in such a great way of just like, you bring, as an audience member, you're bringing your preconceived notions to like what you think the story is going to be. Like once Samuel dies, your first thought usually is like, well, she killed him.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're used to seeing. That's what we're used to understanding. Like it's usually the spouse, right? And so it's always questioning your perception. And I think that there were certain times during the film where I was like, you know, even if she did it, I don't know if I mind. But then later on, I was like, nah, that's still wrong because now Daniel doesn't have a father. Like, no matter what your issues with him was, he still doesn't deserve to die. Like, mm-hmm. your kid now has to grow up without
a
parent and a father in the house. So then that made me change how I viewed her a little bit too, because I was like, I'm on your side kind of, but like, that's, you can't do that. But then it's like, well, if he was suffering with so much mental health issues, was it a suicide? And like, if it was, then how do you explain what the prosecution are saying? Like, are the facts lining up? Could this have really been a reality? How is she handling the situation? Because she seemed a little detached at first, and maybe that was just shock. You know, I just had so many questions in my mind, and I was just like, I don't know. It's not you.
Yeah. I think if I get like me really personal, I apologize, but I don't know. Two things for me is I like stories or pictures like this because, like, I don't understand how. Like, of course, I've seen my parents, you know, relationship problems, you know, but like for me, it's also weird because I think in my circle of friends and even like my parents even comment to me like, "Oh, your parents are still married." And though these kind of things, like, I've never really experienced anything counter to that. Like, yeah, I still know my parents still argue and go back and forth. But I've never seen the other side where, you know, that whole separation thing. So when these movies come up or these topics come up, I'm always usually, like, a casual observer. Because I have no reference point to engage and understand. Like, I can see, oh, relationship problems, we work it out. Like, that's always been my thinking. So to see the counter to it of a relationship where neither side wants to work it out, I've never had to figure out how to understand it. So that's why I love like projects like this. And also on the with the husband, his like mental health issues. For me personally, I do relate to it because I know for me, even when I, with my struggles, I've like, I was able to rationalize when I had my major breaking point, like when I went for help, I was still able to rationalize everything normally, and still tell the doctor, because I'm be honest, I self-admitted myself for psychiatric help. Like, that's how bad I realized I was. But I was still able to compartmentalize and talk to my first therapist in order to not be in the facility I was in as long as I was. So I can see how her husband was able to talk to her therapist, like, say, yeah, I don't need the pills that much. I can wean myself off, because there's also an aspect of you don't think you're as bad as you actually are. So, but now, like, I've had issues before, like, oh, I actually do need my medication. Like, I've had moments where I mean, realize, okay, this is supposed to help me. Like, for him, I think he was also seeing it, his mental health problems, and this is why a stigma that people don't seek the help they need to, and that was also the issue for me, is he saw his mental health issues as a weakness that he could not overcome, and that added to all that those issues he was already having, you know. So like this movie, like where it covers like a large swaths of topics in it.
Yeah, that's so true, and I feel like a lot of people are going to be able to relate to that, even if they haven't gone through that situation themselves, but they know someone who has. Like, it was again just really well articulated. Yeah. Just like what that feels like. And it's interesting when she's like hearing the therapist talk about it in court, Sandra goes, you know, well, if I told my therapist these things, then they probably would have thought that, you know, Samuel was a very different person than who he actually was. And I love that even though they had issues, she always left room for him to be understood, like as like a real person who had many different sides and dimensions to him. Like, No matter what they went through, she was still kind of advocating for him.
Yeah.
Which again made me think that, I don't know if she actually did it. I mean, I don't know. But like, I just thought that was really interesting. And I know for me, like I resonated more with like the marriage part of like just being a child of divorce. They weren't divorced yet, but like,
yeah,
it looked like it was on the, like it was coming to an end on that side. But I understood that, but it also kind of made me scared, because it's like, how she describes their meeting and like how they fell in love. It's just so scary to think that like you can be in such a really good place with someone, and then because of situations that are out of your control and like circumstances, you know, money loss and job switching, and one person's doing better and you're not doing as well, it can completely alter the course of like what your marriage was. And you can end up in a place where you are like throwing stuff at each other and fighting each other. Like, that to me is kind of terrifying. I don't know.
And it wasn't just that. I think it's also that they're opposite track. And you could tell in the scene where they're arguing that their personality is like, he is more empathetic and emotional. She is more. And I hate when people regard women like her and their personality as cold. She is very analytical and she understands what she wants. Like, I have a sister like that, which is always an issue. Like, you analyze things totally different from me. And it's like, growing up, I've had to readjust how I interact with my sister. But it's interesting in that, because even though she's being analytical, straightforward, you could, how she's delivering it, even herself, she's not being intentional. She's like, yes, you brought this on yourself. You need to choose what you want to do, because you're not smart. You're not stupid. You're smart, but you don't give yourself the same credit that you deserve. And I thought that was interesting, because even in the throes of we're not agreeing, I'm still advocating for you. And I love the fact that was recorded in the court and people got to hear, like, we are arguing about this, but I am still saying, no, you are better than what you think you are. You know, I'm still advocating for you. I'm in your court. Even in the midst of us arguing about our relationship and the direction we're heading, I'm like, no, you are smart, you can do this. This shouldn't be happening to you. I love that they added that part into there.
That's what I'm saying. It's just such a well-written like film because they don't let things be black and white. Like you're not just gonna get surface level discussions. Like you're gonna see all of the nuances of all of these people in this entire situation. And I just thought that was great. You also see like the flaws in the criminal system and how, you know, you're trying to gather evidence and prove a case. And some of these things aren't reliable. Like you're trying to count on some people's memories and maybe they remembered something when it was too late and we're already in court and now it's somehow pertinent information. You know, it's just like, it really does divulge into like what it is to be like a person and living and also just what it is to be caught up in one of the situations, how it's like a storm and then it ends, you know, and then people move on, but you're still dealing with, you know, the tragedy of what happened in your life. God, this movie is great.
Yeah,
It's
like it's great. Like you said, the confusion of these court cases, like your key witness is a child who is a child and B is also blind. So and then you're making him and his mother reenact what happened that day with music saying, "Oh, do you hear them now? Do you hear them now?" And it makes sense why that was inconclusive because it is a child. You are having to reenact probably one of the worst days of their life and try and compartmentalize and be like, oh, maybe I heard it this way. Like, no, like yeah, so.
Yeah, that's funny because like in Woman Talking, the movie we talked about, I don't know, last year or something, the director was saying something similar where she was like, when you go through something traumatic, you're not gonna remember all of the details because it was a traumatic experience. But a lot of the times the criminal justice system wants to take testimonies and wants to get your account of things right after the thing has happened. And then it's like, well, you don't even you can't recount everything that's just happened, but that's the basis of what they're going to use to, you know, try to prove the case. So it's like a big error in how things are done because it's just like we're not understanding, I guess, human psychology and how things work and how trauma works because it's like you can't assume that someone's going to have all the details right after something like that has happened to them. Just because it's fresh doesn't mean it's not like you're not going to like sometimes you dissociate when certain things happen to you. And like, you know, so I hope that I don't know who's watching this. I don't know if anybody in the law system is watching this movie, but like, I just want like,
Fix your
I want
shit.
there to be, yeah, like we have to take all of that into account now. Like we can't be ignorant of that stuff anymore. So that's all I'm saying. But yeah, great film. I think this movie is nominated for a whole bunch of stuff. Obviously, it won the Palme d'Or, but Sandra Hüller just was nominated for a BAFTA, two BAFTAs actually, for her role in this and her role in another movie. So like, this movie's doing well as it should. It's so good. So.
I think it's on the short list for international feature at the Oscars, I think. You know,
Yeah,
it basically won,
I'm sure it is.
it won best film in there, like equivalent to the Golden Globes, and she won best actress as well. So yeah, I think, yeah, like beyond like the American viewing palette of like Barbie and Oppenheimer, like I think it's a really tight race for like all these best pictures. I do think this is one of these movies that should be included in the regular best picture category as well. But yeah, it's the Oscar season is looking up to be really, really nice.
Yeah, I think it probably will. Like I said, I think we talked about this last year. Last year was an amazing year for a film, like bangers after bangers after bangers, truly. So.
On to the bit of news. Of course, recently announced, of course, they're doing another Jurassic World movie. I don't know how I feel about that. I'm kind of like Jurassic Parked out. I think the last one I actually like have tangible memories of watching. Honestly, like I watched the first one as a kid. I watched Jurassic Park Lost World as a kid, and I remember those two. Then I skipped one, and then I remember the first one with what's his face? Chris,
Yep.
yeah, the first one he was in. I saw that in college because my friend was like a mad Jurassic Park fan, a mad Steelbooks fan, and we all got drunk and watched out. But other than that, I have no, like, it's not a franchise I'm invested in emotionally and stuff like that. But apparently people are. It's making Universal money enough to where they say, hey, we did a trilogy, and then we did another trilogy, and now we're going to do another movie. It's like 7 movies for them, so, yeah. It's printing money, so, hey.
I can't believe that they're making another one of these. I feel like this is, Jurassic World is becoming like a fast franchise type of thing, where it's like, the movies aren't good, but we're just going to keep making them.
Yeah.
So, who knows, we'll get up to number 10. With these movies, I watched the first one, the original one, like,
yeah.
Moose did. I didn't see the second one. And then I think I skipped a whole, whatever was in the middle, and jumped to the first one of Chris Pratt's one. And then I didn't watch the rest of those. So it's just like, girl, what are the dinosaurs going to do? They're going to go to space?
Yeah.
Like in Fast X? Like, okay.
The next one, you're going to, like, see Vin Diesel, like, drive down the tail of, like, a T-Rex and launch his Dodge to something else, you know?
Please, I want that to be the next movie. It needs to be a fast Jurassic World crossover. I will go see that.
Look, they're both Universal properties, so you never know. We might see them the next Mission of Dom. It's about family and dinosaurs. And, you know, you never know.
That would be great. That'd be amazing. our next news is that Sundance Film Festival has started. So there are some really interesting things that I'm looking forward to. We're both going to participate in the festival like we do every year. So that podcast will be coming soon. But I think Malia Obama directed a short film. So that's really exciting. I can't wait to see that. Kristen Stewart and Stephen Young have a movie coming out called Love Me, I think it is. That's already getting some buzz, so I'm interested to see that movie. What is his name? He's so talented. He was in, I think he was in Moonlight.
Mm-hmm.
Andre Holland. He also has a movie at Sundance, which I can't wait to see. I can't remember what it's called, but I have it written down. I'm very excited to see that. So there are some really cool films coming out, and Saoirse Ronan has a film coming out. Sundance is looking pretty good, so I'm excited. But at Sundance, there was a protest that was planned, a pro-Palestine protest at Sundance. So Melissa Barra, who is from the Scream franchises, and she was let go from that position because of all of her pro-Palestine support online. Her, India Moore, and other well-known people that were out there protesting during Sundance, chanting "End the genocide." And I think that it kind of makes sense. Like, to me, it makes sense that they would have this protest plan at Sundance, because Sundance is always kind of championing, like, minority stories anyways. Like, that's kind of their thing. So I was like, yeah, I love that. I love that this happened and that they gave them space to actually do this protest, like, while all of these really cool movies are coming out. And Sundance is like indie, but also like their deals we made for millions of dollars to get the rights for these films and the distribution rights for these films. So it's like, it's still business. But I love that they gave space for this to happen, because it's a very important message that needs to be heard wherever. And I feel like Hollywood kind of post-strikes are just more in a position to, like, be political in a way that maybe they weren't really before. So,
well, I don't know, because, like, we just had Sarah Ramirez, of course, everybody knows from Grey's Anatomy. She was on a Sex and the City reboot, and she was fired. An insider says it's not due to her stance of being pro-Palestine. Somebody says it's because her character brought nothing to the show anymore, which is the latest in a long line, even during the strike until after, of a lot of actors, like you mentioned, Screamcast, being dropped from roles due to their political stance. in the industry. So I think that is a big concerning issue going forward if it continue if this continues. Like, I think the writers, the strikes, well, the union probably needs to go back and amend something, because it's unfair for actors and actresses to lose their livelihood for certain opinions, where you have other people in the industry saying very harmful and negative things and nothing happens as well, you know. So
yeah, they need to get that together. That's true. Okay, so what have we been watching this week?
Honestly, I haven't watched much of anything other than, of course, playoffs. Oh, well, playoffs. NFL playoffs. Even though the Dolphins were out, still watching it. You know, Patrick Mahomes, somehow the Chiefs came back. You know, Lamar Jackson doing his thing. Haven't really watched much movie stuff because I've been on the road this whole week. So I'm hopefully with some downtime now, I can get back and start watching stuff. I'm probably going to start rewatching the Avatar The Last Airbender, the first season, before the live-action Netflix special show comes out in March. So I'll probably start doing like 1 or 2 episodes a day of that.
Mm-hmm. Who is going to the Super Bowl? Is it the Chiefs again?
The Chiefs play the Ravens next, Lamar Jackson. And the 49ers play the Detroit Lions. And then after that, the winners of those two games go play in the Super Bowl. Only thing I care about the Super Bowl, though, is Usher's halftime performance.
This is true. So, this is the only reason I will be tuned in. But I was just wondering, because, like, I don't pay attention to these things. I grew up in Maryland, so I guess I'm a Ravens fan, by proxy. Yeah. But, so I'm rooting for them. But I know the Kansas City Chiefs haven't they won like 2 years in a row? I don't know. Didn't they win this year?
They've won two, if I remember correctly, but not two in a row, though.
Not two in a row, right. Yeah. There was some space between. But like, they seem determined to be at the Super Bowl. Anyways, that's not important. The only important thing is Usher, so whatever.
Yeah.
I rewatched La La Land with my best friend. And she's getting more into film. She's on Letterboxd. Like, I'm really happy she's a film girly now. It's great. And yeah, it's a good movie. La La Land is like my comfort movie, but there are definitely some issues with it. Like the glaring obvious ones, but like, I still like it. And I watched American Fiction, and that was pretty good. We'll talk about it later. But my friend was like, she loved all of it except for the ending. And then I watched the ending and I was like, why don't you like this? But we'll discuss later. But it was quite something. I'm truly excited about these Black filmmakers. Like, there's something, there's like another shift. Like, we had Jordan Peele and, you know, Barry Jenkins and stuff kind of revolutionizing what like Black cinema could be, like, I don't know how many years ago, 2018, all around that time. I feel like we're in a new era right now. Like, this movie, I think there's another movie called The Society of Magical Negroes or something. I don't know if that's gonna be good. But I heard some things, I'm not sure, but like but also Ava DuVernay's film Origin, like, there's, it feels like we're confronting some stuff. We're talking about things openly in a really cool way. I'm excited for these films that are coming out, these films, these TV shows. I feel like we're in a second renaissance. We're in the Beyonce Renaissance part 2. That's what it feels like.
Look, and it's funny you bring that up with like the new crop of, you know, Black directors, Black filmmakers, Black creatives in Hollywood now. Because I was watching a video from Empty Signifier talking about that very standpoint with mostly with Spike Lee being the only prominent Black voice in Hollywood for decades until, you know, the counterpoint to Spike's viewpoint was kind of the Tyler Perry's, which, you know, as they're two different schisms on Black filmmaking. Mm-hmm. But he was talking about, for the longest, Spike was on Carrying the Banner, and because he wanted to talk about certain topics, his movies were, you know, discredited or not given proper funding. But now you see the industry, I think, has realized, like, Black people will fund Black movies. They will go out in droves mm-hmm. to see it. And now they're not making more for equality's sake, like, oh, let's get more minority representation in Hollywood and in TV, because HBO canceled, like, every single Black show, like, over the week. But I think they're seeing the dollars the Black community will spend in supporting other Black people. So
that's the only thing I understand. But yeah, so I'm excited for next week. So that's it from us this week. Hope that you're all doing well. Please make sure to check out all of our social media, support us if you can, and we will see you guys in the next episode. Goodbye.
Au revoir.